Welcome back, everybody, to another exciting episode of Cast of the Past, a podcast where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom. Now, Josh, look, I know we probably would have saved this for later in the episode. I'm so excited. I just have to ask you. All right. What do you prefer, Escape or Frontiers?
I would say Escape.
Oh, daring. Okay, but here's the real question. Steve Perry or Arnel Pineda?
Oh, Steve Perry.
Oh, wow. You're a purist. I appreciate it. Man, I can't wait to talk Journey with you. This is so excited. I researched their whole catalog. You know, I listened to everything. This is going to be a great Journey episode.
So what we're going to be talking about here is the Journey video game that came out on the Atari 2600.
Yep. Absolutely. No other Journey we would need to talk about.
No, not at all. Separate ways, that scene when you're inside of in Tron Legacy.
Oh my gosh, one of the best needle drops in movie history, yes.
No, we're actually going to be talking about the PlayStation 3 / PlayStation 4 classic, Journey.
I was waiting to see who was going to break the bit first, because I wasn't. I was going to keep that going. It's going to be the TurboTax episode all over again.
I was going to say, listen, we did that for TurboTax. I think we could improvise Journey, the video game. But there actually is a Journey game that came out on the Atari 2600.
I didn't know that, but when you said that, I was like, well,
I have it over there.
I can't reveal that I don't know that.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah, Journey, one of the most acclaimed games of the last decade. Lots and lots and lots of hype behind this title. This is my first time playing it ever for this episode. And Josh, you've only played this once before, is that correct?
I did play it a second time for this episode, and I will go into detail about my second playthrough, or my conclusion of my second playthrough, towards the end of this episode. But I want to kind of give a warning right now. Stop listening to this podcast and go play this game, because the experience that you will have playing this game will not justify what me and Tom are going to be talking about here. We will be spoiling a bunch of stuff that happens in this game and giving some ideas and thoughts about it, but I want to let everyone know that it's not going to do justice than actually putting a controller in your hand and playing this game for about 2 hours.
Okay. Yep. That is the same warning Josh gave me before I played it. He said, don't look at anything. Don't listen to anybody. He told me to just play it. And now we're here to discuss it. So just for the sake of the conversation, I played this on a PlayStation 5 via the PlayStation 4 port. I assume you probably played that version for this episode, correct?
I did. For my second playthrough, I did play it on the PlayStation 5. My original, I played on the PS3.
All right. Well, Josh, before we talk about our journeys, do you want to talk about some nitties? Maybe some gritties?
Let's put those together and let's talk about the nitty gritty.
Okay, I like that. All right, so if everyone's ready. Journey was released on March 13th, 2012 for the PlayStation 3, and it was later ported to the PS4 in 2015 and then to Windows and iOS in 2019. It was developed by That Gaming Company and Santa Monica Studio. That Gaming Company is a little indie studio run by a developer known as Genova Chen, and it is known for making some other big kind of quirky indie hits such as Flow and Flower. It was published by Sony Computer Entertainment, and Annapurna Interactive handled the PC and Mac ports. And if you've listened to any of our streams or the show, you know we are big fans of Annapurna and what they're doing for the indie gaming scene. Love that studio.
Yes, 100%. Mm-hmm. So, have you ever seen or played Flow or Flower?
Flower, I'm very aware of. I remember when that came out in around 2009, that was just one of those games where people were like, what is this? It's this charming little adventure game, I guess you could say, where you play a flower petal on a breeze, and the gimmick is just kind of like ride the airwaves and hook up with other flower petals to make a big chain.
Yeah.
And it's just supposed to be this lovely little atmospheric game. But that's the only familiarity I have. What about you, Josh?
So I haven't played Flow. I do have a collection where it has all three games attached to it, and I've just never gone back to play Flow. I did play Flower. I really liked Flower. But okay. I played Flower after I did Journey because I was like, man, if Journey is going to give me such an experience like I just had, what's Flower going to do? And Flower blew me away, too. I was like, there's no way that I could have feelings for a flower petal. Like, however they did this, like, kudos, congrats, like you did it. I appreciate what that game company has done. I think they are really good with giving you a lot with a little bit.
Okay. Well, can I just tell you a little bit of something interesting that I found in my research for this episode about that gaming company and kind of what you were just talking about, that experience you were just talking about?
Okay. Yeah. Tell me.
So Genova Chen, who is a Chinese game developer, Genova is not his given first name, but it's basically an adopted name from how much he loved Final Fantasy VII. So his name that he throws out there, his name is Genova Chen. In an interview that Chen gave with the gaming outlet Gamma Sutra, they detailed how they were born in China and they grew up in China, but they spent a lot of their professional years working in America, developing games in America. And kind of as a result, he has said that he feels disconnected from both cultures. He feels neither like fully at home in his place of birth or in his place of work. And so the games that he leans towards creating, he wants to bring out universal emotions that anyone can really connect to regardless of what their background is. That's really important to Genova, and like everything you just said about how can I connect with an inanimate object like this, apparently his goal succeeded for you if he tapped into that.
Man, there's so much to talk about, and like at the same time, if you would just kind of discuss what happens in this game, it doesn't sound fun or eventful. It's just, but when you get into the nitty-gritty of the game itself, there is so much underlying, you know, themes to this game, and there's so many similarities to other stuff that's happened in the world that really do work with this game and this story that's being told here. So we start the game off in a desert, and you play a robed figure. I guess we call him like the Wanderer, something.
Sure. For the sake of this conversation, let's call him the Wanderer.
Okay. So you're just out there walking around the desert. No real story, no nothing. And, you know, it's pretty much given that you have to get to the top of this mountain. There's something up on the top of the mountain. There's a light at the top of the mountain that you need to get to. And throughout the game, you kind of just piece together your own interpretation of what you think is actually happening. You see these mythical creatures through cutscenes that are like more spiritual versions of yourself that they are trying to guide you on your way.
Right. You know, that is the bare bones summary of what we're doing here. You're wandering this wasteland. You're walking through the ruins of all of these fallen societies, piecing together what happened. And it's all done in this third person, you know, linear platformer style, where there are some, I would say at most, stealth elements, but there's not really a lot of action. I mean, there are some intense sequences, but the gameplay is all forced around two mechanics. One is a jump that is not unlimited. It's a jump with ammo, basically. Your character wears a scarf, and the scarf glows with little runes. And if all the runes are glowing, you can jump that many times. And you can recharge via various, you know, area effects or interacting with certain objects. And then the other mechanic is what I guess I'll call a chime. You press circle and your character emits a musical note, kind of with a wave effect. The longer you hold it in, the bigger the effect is. And the chime, you know, activates things in the world that are susceptible to, you know, the kind of magic behind the chime. And that's really all it is. Except, you know, Josh, you can do all that by yourself, or you can do it with someone else. Can you not?
You can. You can definitely do that with someone else. So let's get in and talking about the multiplayer aspect of this game, because the story is going to piece itself together as we're going through. And I think as we're talking about our experiences with the game, we can talk about different types of puzzles that were in there, different little scenarios and little areas, I guess. In the game, my first time playing through, I remember walking through the desert after you come over the first little like hill and you see kind of like a graveyard set up. And yes. It's very eerie because you're like, oh, what type of game is this going to be? Like, I have to start in a graveyard. Is this going to be Splatterhouse 2? I don't think so.
Is this going to be Ghosts and Goblins Remastered? I don't know.
No, we don't know. So as I'm walking through the desert, though, I see another wanderer. And I'm like,
Was it a horse with no name?
Yeah. And when I was going through, I'm like, I didn't think that this was actually a multiplayer game. Like, I thought this was just a game that you play by yourself.
Mm.
And I knew about the little charm, the little chirps and stuff like that. So I hit it, and like it was like he made the little chirping sound, and then they came over and they were walking with me, and we were together throughout the whole game, and we were playing and solving puzzles together and recharging each other's stamina, because if you hold in your chirp a little bit longer, you can actually refill your
scarf.
Yeah, the scarf of your helper. Mm-hmm. So the player two, I guess we'll call it. And it was just fun. Like, and we know me, I don't like multiplayer games. But the fact that I was going through this game together with somebody, and I was like, man, we're not even communicating, we're not talking, we're not doing anything, but we know what each other are doing. The fact that they were able to bring communication pieces by just little chirps and bloops to this massive game that they're like, hey, come here, like, you know what they're trying to do, they're trying to help you up there, and like, if you are struggling somewhere, they know how to give you an extra little boost. Like, you don't need to explain anything for these two players to click. I knew what they were thinking, they knew what I was thinking, and that was insane to do this for 2 hours for somebody. What was your experience with multiplayer?
Well, so yes, as you mentioned, it's co-op in that if you discover somebody on the journey as well, you can join them and they can join you. I ran into a few companions throughout the quest. I had 4 companions overall by the end, and the first 3 basically outright ignored me. They didn't follow me. They didn't respond to me. I don't know if they were AFK or if they were on the pause menu, but you know, they were just sitting there and they wouldn't get up. And so I just was like, all right, fine, keep moving. But I did find somebody towards the end in a section, which I guess we can call like a golden tower, where you have to activate puzzles as you ascend. And they were like enthusiastically playing the game. And I kind of like wandered over and was like, you know, helping them solve things so that they can jump up this activating tower. And then they chose to follow me. And yeah, as you said, we had just one of those unspoken connections of like, I got your back if you got mine, and let's just keep going towards the end of this. And they did not make it all the way with me. They were playing pretty sloppy during a high stakes section later down the line. And I basically reached a point where I was just like, well, look, I gotta go. I can't stay here to deal with your shit anymore. So mm-hmm. I just left. And that was my experience
with other people. So let me go in with the rest of my first time playing multiplayer experience. Okay. So
sure.
I went through with this person and we were going through this entire game. We did all of it to the very end, me and this player. When I finished the game, 12 names came up.
Okay.
And the fact that, you know, this is on the PlayStation 3, around the time that this game came out, the fact that I had that experience where I thought I was playing with one person, I actually ended up playing with 12 different people.
Well, see, that's actually really interesting. I don't understand how that works because, you know, I played with... The game said I met 4 companions, and I counted 4 along the way. And you're saying end-to-end, you know, load screen to load screen.
Yeah.
You were always around the same player character, but it all actually was 12 people? That seems really... Well, that's something. That's something. I'll give you that.
It's interesting because I think, like, what would happen is if they went out during a cutscene or something like that, they came back in. They came... Like, it came in as somebody else. Like, it picked it right back up where we left off.
Right. So what you're kind of pointing out is that this is not just this like seamless open world constantly populated organically by people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is there's like, I guess you could say, multiple contained sessions of Journey happening at once across the PlayStation Network. And you may be dropped into picked up and dropped out of another one between a loading session or something just to facilitate giving others a chance to join.
But the fact, though, that like now there is an achievement, there is a trophy that you can get where you go through the entire game with somebody, with one person, which I think if you really put a lot of work into it, you could definitely get it. But it was just one of those things that like when I was done, I was like, I can't believe that I just played the game with 12 different people and got the same, like it felt continuous.
Gotcha.
Like that was insane. Like, And we can, you know, I want to jump to the end of it here, but I want to save it for a little bit because that end climb is just so mesmerizing in okay. gameplay status. But yeah, I just think it's great that, like I said, no communication needed, and you're able to have such an amazing experience with so many people. It is right, This is extremely unlike anything that I've ever played before.
Right, but I think something that's worth noting is that, you know, this game is not tied to any kind of shared experience. You know, I played 75% of this game by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an experience that you can have solo, and the game functions solo, you know, so there is that.
If you do play the game by yourself, like, there's a different strategy almost that you need to go into thinking about how you're going to get past this puzzle, how you're going to get through this area, where with having someone with you, both of you are keeping each other alive, and not alive, but you're both keeping yourself fully stocked and with your jump ability. So, like, as you're getting ready, as you're falling, the other person can boost you, and then you can recharge your jump again so you can take off again and go even higher. Like, there's so many different ways that you can go about playing the game. And that's what it comes to with my second playthrough. I actually was able to finish this game in like an hour and 10 minutes, my second playthrough, because the game's been out for so long, I knew what to do in the game, and apparently so did everybody else. So we were just like boom, 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 hopping around, just taking off all over the place. But the first playthrough took me about 2.5 hours, I would say, to beat, because I explored a lot. Okay. Let's talk about the world, though. What did you think about it? What did you think about the desert? Anything stand out? Anything?
Well, that's a complicated thing for me to answer. Are you asking, like, in summation, or?
I'm talking about the world in general. So, like, all the different levels.
I think I'm gonna have to get something out of the way. I was a little underwhelmed by this game. I'm not going to lie. And I'm going to say something that shocked me to realize. I think this is one of, if not the first game I have ever fallen asleep while playing. I am not kidding. I'm not saying that like in like a dick way. I'm saying the controller was in my hands and my fingers were still kind of like half-heartedly moving, but I was asleep for like at least a solid minute before I was like, "Oh, I'm playing a video game." Wow. And so, like, here's the funny thing, like, you told me, you very enthusiastically told me you need to play this in one session. I was like, okay. And I think it was like last Sunday, I sat down and I got through a half hour of it. And I was like really, really like drowsy. I was like, maybe I'm just too tired for today to play this game. And then like, I mentioned to you like, yeah, I started it. And you yelled at me. You're like, you didn't finish it. And I was like, well no, circumstances. But like, you know, I found time. I was like, here's an entire 2 hours. I'm going to sit down. And I still fell asleep. And, wow. Like, in this literal the same section. And, like, here's what I just have to say about the world. And maybe it's a symptom of that. Like, it's very gorgeously rendered, and it's very atmospheric and interesting. But, you know, it's so empty and so desolate that it's kind of a little boring. You know, I did not think that the overall mystery in this game took very long to figure out. And, you know, we'll go over it at some point. We can go over it now, but it's a straightforward kind of a society fell because of their hubris, and you are the kind of chosen one rebirth of the what used to be. You know, like, you are the planet's second chance. You are existence's second chance. And I was just like, okay, it seems like this is where this game is going. And then, yep, that's where this game's going. And it tells the story very beautifully. Especially in the back half. Like, the back half, I'll give way more credit. Like, that is where the game kind of really bursts to life in really spectacular ways. But I would say the opening kind of desert sections of this took a while for me to fully get there.
Okay. That's insane, though. Like, just hearing that, like, I had no idea. Like, that shocked me. I am shocked right now.
Well, I did not mean to break your heart. No, I just got to be honest, you know. No, like,
Because,
like... they're just these big linear levels that funnel you in one direction, and there's not a lot of enemies. You know, the challenges, the puzzles. There are enemies later.
Yeah.
But their threats are also conditional. They're just basically kind of like line of sight stealth enemies. So you can walk. You can keep walking. There's no cliffs to fall off of. There's like the fact that I fell asleep at the wheel. I didn't crash the car because there's nothing to crash the car into. You know, like.
So, the reason I said that you should play this game in one sitting is mm-hmm. the experience of being able to play it with people.
Sure.
You know, the experience of understanding when you get to the end that, shit, you just played the game with this many people. Like, that's insane. Like, the communication to it. And what I say about playing it in one sitting, I didn't want you to just start playing it and then just quit out of the game because then, like, you just screwed somebody else over.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Right. That's an actual good point to make. That's something I never even considered. Okay.
So that's the only reason I wanted you not only to look out for yourself, but I also wanted you to look out for other players. And gotcha. That's me talking about multiplayer stuff, Tom.
If Josh cares this much. Yeah, I get you. I get you.
Going into the story, though, I will say the game doesn't pick up until you go underground.
Yeah.
When you go underground and then you start seeing the machine sentinel type things flying around and you have to hide from them, that's when the game really starts to pick up. Because before that, it is just normal jumping, platforming, puzzles type games, which is great, which is fun, which is fine. But I understand how it can get stale. I think I was more intrigued with the story to get from point A to point B that it didn't bother me that much. Mm-hmm. And then when I got underground, I'm like, oh, this is just an added food. Like, this is good stuff now. Like, I'm just getting more for my money now. And playing it, man, I thought it was unlike anything that I've played story-wise. You know, there's not a single spoken word in this entire game. No dialogue, mm-hmm. no nothing. You are up to interpret it however you want. And like you said, like, oh, you're the last, you know, you're like the rebirth. You're pretty much going in to try to make this world new again. There's a lot of similarities that people say about this being like, you know, Jesus and God. You know what I mean? Where you, the God's up on the top of the mountain and then you're being sent up there to meet him. But you have to go through this painstakingly like you death pretty much to get to sure. that point. But then it also turns into reincarnation. At the end again too. So like there's so many different ways that you can interpret what's happening in the world. The way you described it sounds very similar to the Matrix movie, just with sand.
Interesting. Right. Well, yeah. You know, as a Catholic school survivor, I think it's hilarious that the Jesus metaphor didn't even cross my mind. And there's some merit. There's some merit to it, I guess. Can I real quick just lay it out? As Josh said, begin in a desert. You cross through some ruined civilizations, you go underground, you start exploring the catacombs of these civilizations, you find this central tower, as you rise, the kind of magic of the tower is reactivated, and then, Josh, where does the tower lead you to?
The tower leads you to the, pretty much the summit. You know, so the doors open up, these six mythical wanderers in white cloaks right. will...
Compared to your red cloak.
Yep. Pretty much tell you, like, show you that you need to climb. You're close, which still seems pretty damn far away from where you're at. You start climbing up the mountain, and as you're climbing up, you notice that your scarf's starting to disappear a little bit, and you're starting to freeze. So you are technically dying as you are climbing this mountain now. Yeah. And you're
like,
constantly...
No matter how much force you push on the analog stick, like, your character is, you know, like, almost losing the will to go on, but their steps just get slower and heavier and harder. Like the life, you're watching the life get sucked out of your main yeah. character.
So this, though, Tom, is why I also said to play it in one sitting. Because if you're going with somebody up that mountain, both of you are walking up and making that climb together, keeping each other alive the entire time. So as you're both going, you're holding the button in to rejuvenate the other person, and then they're using it to rejuvenate you. So as you're both making that trek so slowly up the mountain, you're both doing everything in your power to keep the other person alive. And like,
I lost my guy on the summit in the sections where the evil sentinel monsters were patrolling, because my partner just kept getting caught in their spotlights, and that's where I just abandoned him, because I was like, all right, if you're gonna keep doing this, I can't do this. So yeah. I made the climb solo.
It was just, it's so crazy though, like, talking about how there's no communication between you and the other player, and the fact that both of you are doing everything in your power to keep the other, because you're like, don't die on me, don't die on me, we got this, we can get there, we're so close. And as you're going and going and going, and then it gets towards the end, so close to the end, both of you are so exhausted that you can't rejuvenate the other person. And then at one time, we both just, and then just fall right in the snow, both of us dead. And we're just like, oh man, it's just so heartbreaking. You know what I mean? Like, it's just watching your partner die. And it's like, oh my God, like, we've been through so much, but actually not knowing that we haven't actually been through much together, me and that person. Me and 11 other people.
You don't know me. You don't know where I'm from.
Me and 11 other people have been so through so much, okay? But seeing that, experiencing that was unlike anything I've ever done in a game. Yeah, I've rejuvenated people and brought people back to life and revived them and stuff like that, right? Like, we've done that in video games, but not to the extent that this game made it feel like we were both fighting for our lives. It was insane.
Right. Well, I think something that is worth noting is probably just through the social aspect compared to other things else. Like, we talk about revivals, you know, you got Phoenix Downs in the Final Fantasy world. You've got revives in the Pokemon world. It's like, oh, those are, you know, actively done by you, the player, to NPCs, you know, like party NPCs. But it harkens to the experience of, you know, like, needing to quickly revive a friend in Dungeons & Dragons, for example. You know what I mean? I get exactly what you're saying, even though I didn't immediately experience it. But there is something more powerful when you know it's another person, and you know, you kind of feel the inner goodness of helping them, you know what I mean? Because it's good to help people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then once you're done, and you die, the six figures appear again. And they technically bring you back to life.
Mm-hmm.
So you can finish the journey. And once you make it to the top, it is like, oh, everything's so cool now. You got unlimited jump abilities. You can do all this kind of stuff. And like, it is almost like a celebration, like a welcome home type thing.
Right. The top of the mountain is this paradise where all of the beings who seem to have been made up of the magic that the society below, you know, as you come to piece together, the society below collapsed because of their abuse of this red ribbon magic. And then up at the top of the mountain is like this Mount Olympus, you know, garden where the red ribbon creatures are still alive because this is like their last haven, their last stronghold. And you have now made it and you're celebrating with them. You're riding on a dragon, you know, you're flying over these waterfalls and stuff. And I agree with you. It was visually stunning.
Yeah, it is so, like, just beautiful looking, right? Great water in video games. We know how I feel about water in video games.
If you show Josh a wet video game, Josh is just like, game of the year. Game of the year. This game is wet.
But when you make it all the way up to the top, then you start to have a little bit of a descend. And you make your way back down part of the mountain. And it pretty much goes all the way down to where you started the game again.
Well, you're talking about the credit sequence specifically, because the final, you know, active sequence you can control is you walk into the pillar of light that you've been following the whole game. At the peak of the mountain, you walk through this crevice into the light, and then the credit sequence is like the light kind of shoots out a little shooting star, and the star goes back over every environment that you've explored, and then, as Josh said, it lands you right back at the beginning. So the cycle repeats itself.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Which, I mean, I would never repeat it, right? And I told you when we chose that we were going to play this game, right? We were going to play this game, and I said, I will not play this game again. I could never copy the excitement, the feelings, the emotions, the gameplay. I can never copy that. I can never duplicate that again. And I was sitting here a couple hours ago and I was like, you know what? I'm going to put it on. I'm just going to try to remember some of the puzzles and see, you know, so we can talk about it and stuff. And I played through the entire game again and I did not have the same experience the same time. Okay. And it left not a sour taste in my mouth. I just felt meh, just underwhelmed from it because it was so magical the first time. It's like the first time you went and saw Avengers Endgame, the wow that you saw when you watched it, right?
Okay.
And
okay.
Then that part comes up again, you know, where all the Avengers get together and it's like, all right, it's cool again, but like, it doesn't have that same feeling. And it's the same thing.
I still think it's one of the best movie scenes of the last decade, but I mean, I get what you're saying. You can never recreate it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was heartbreaking because I was like, I didn't want to do this. I did it and I did not get the same experience. So like, it's almost like it's been tainted now, but I still have that first time. I still have that moment of playing the game, seeing how many people I played with, going on like a spiritual journey pretty much with people in a video game that was unlike anything before. And gotcha. I think, and I'm going to jump right to my conclusion to this game. If you've never played this game, play it once just to experience it. So one thing we didn't talk about though, right? Because I want to get into your conclusion of it before we do, right? That score.
Oh, it's beautiful.
The music to this game, beautiful, right?
Even before I'd played this game, I was familiar with the score. The score. I have sections of the score on Spotify. I think it's some of the best orchestral music produced in anything, music, TV, whatever, in a long time. The score for Journey rules.
And the set pieces. There's some beautiful set pieces in this game. There's one about a quarter of the way through when you're sliding down the sand dunes and the one mountain, and it cuts to a side view of you going through these ruins, and the sun is shining, the way that the sun is hitting the sand with you as a silhouette inside of it. Just beautiful looking. This is a very artistic game.
Besides the kind of Valhalla paradise at the end, the sun silhouette sequence is easily the most striking moment of the game. I know that like I instantly went into the PS5 media thing and like I was like, save the last 30 seconds of this game, please. You know, yeah, it is that striking.
So I've pretty much said my side and my piece of my conclusion to this game, Tom. What do you think? What is your overall?
Are we talking about interpretations or opinions? What do we want to go with?
What's your opinion on the game?
Well, as I said, you know, I think this game has an incredibly slow start. And it clearly was probably made slower for me by the fact that I didn't bump into anybody. Now, this is a 9-year-old game at this point, going on 9 years old. So the amount of people who may be dipping into it is much, much smaller than it was when you played it for the first time on the PlayStation 3. And that can affect anybody's playthrough. If you can't get a partner, I guess you just have to kind of wander by yourself, and you know, wandering's hard. I don't know. It's a big, beautiful world, but I think it is a little bit too big in ways where it just feels more empty than exciting. But when it does start to pick up and get more kind of like action driven and more, I guess, just emotionally thrilling, it's where I at least started to connect with it. I thought it has this very straightforward and elegantly delivered story. As you said, you know, it's all show, don't tell. And it's shown in a very, you know, appealing way. And, you know, it's just fine. Like, it is a good game that I would recommend people play. It's just I came into this knowing that this was, like, on best of the decade lists, that it was, like, you know, a game of the year contender, and in some cases winner back in 2012. You know, I think I came into this with too high of an expectation, and I'm glad you said your piece about why you could never replay it, because after I did finish it, I was kind of like, why the hell did Josh say he wouldn't play this with me? I was like, that's mean. There was no reason he couldn't have played it. But now that I understand the personal connection you had to your experience, I give it to you.
And also, there's no way we could play. You can't link up with somebody else in that game. It's all random.
Well, we just turn him on at the same time. And we keep resetting. We keep get on the phone and we go, is that you? Is that you? And then we just keep resetting until we get it. It's like chat roulette. You know, you never know who you're going to get.
That's true.
But if you work hard enough, is chat roulette a dead reference? Am I giving away my age here?
Possibly.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about just what this game did, though, right? The reception of this game before we kind of send off.
Produced one of the best Mega 64 episodes of all time. I want to say that. Have you seen
the
Mega 64 Journey?
I have seen that, yes.
If you haven't seen that, please go watch that. It is hysterical. It's in my fiance and I. It's in our like YouTube rotation. Like if we just need something to like throw on while we're just having like one of those nights, it's like I'll put the Journey thing on so I can watch the dog chase them and everything. It's good.
So the game got praised everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, nines and higher, nines and up, pretty much. You know, ever since it came out. Long
that should
ago.
Be a dating app. Nines and up.
Nines and up, right?
I wouldn't be allowed on it because I'm clearly like a 6.5, but you know, some people, they would really appreciate that.
Right, right. The soundtrack was nominated for Best Score for Visual Media at the 2013 Grammys.
Well deserved.
Right? The first soundtrack.
What did it lose to?
I don't know.
Because I know it didn't win. Oh, I'm just going.
Why? How would I know that?
I'm sorry. I thought you. I'm sorry, Josh. But anyway, go on.
It was the first video game soundtrack to be nominated for that category.
That is insane. That is the first.
Yeah.
But good for it.
Like that, I gotta say that. Yeah. That just shows you how great the soundtrack is, right? Numerous Game of the Year nominees. I don't believe it won any of them though.
Oh, okay.
The official PlayStation magazine gave it the 5th best PlayStation 3 game of all time.
Okay.
And Push Square publication named it the number one soundtrack of the decade. The 16th annual DICE Awards. Journey won 8 awards, the most honors received of the night, which included, so at the DICE Awards, right, it won... Mm-hmm. Outstanding Innovations in Gaming, Casual Game of the Year, Outstanding Achievements in Game Direction, Outstanding Achievements in Art Direction, Outstanding Achievements in Online Gameplay, Outstanding Achievements in Original Music, Outstanding Achievements in Sound Design, and Game of the Year.
Let me ask a question. Can you read the other Game of the Year nominees for me right now?
XCOM, Enemy Unknown.
All right.
The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Borderlands 2.
Okay.
And Far Cry 3.
Hot take. 2012, weak year for video games, if that's the best. What's your opinion?
No, I mean, it is pretty weak. I know a lot of people... I think IGN gave it to The Walking Dead that year. And I understand that...
It was the height of The Walking Dead's TV show popularity.
Yeah, well, I mean, Telltale, you know, the Telltale story is good. It is a good game. And it was the first of those episodic games that actually ever hit the ground running and working.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. This set the standard for Telltale's episodic formula, almost kind of to their detriment, because then they just kept leaning on this until the studio went bankrupt.
Overall, I recommend you to play this game at least one time. I hope you can find someone that you share that experience with that is unlike anything in gaming. But it's going to be really difficult for a game that's 9 years old.
Right. Yes. Your experience may vary is what we're getting at here. But, you know, I guess that's just what makes this game special. It's not something that you're going to have the same story to tell because that's boring. So I will give Journey that. You will get something unique out of it no matter what.
Yeah. And if you don't like the game... A banger soundtrack.
There you go. So you win, at least in some capacity. But if you have any interesting Journey stories, either with companions or maybe your own spin on the narrative, hey, maybe you've got something that's way more out of field than what Josh and I summarized happened, please drop it in the comments. You know, tell us what you think of Journey.
And until next time, this has been Josh.
And Tom.
And we'll see you in the future. While we boot up the Triflex capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. This show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, and future of gaming, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun, so come chat with us anytime.
Thanks again for listening.
And we'll see you in the future.